When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live from the Dolby Theater at Ovation Hollywood, please welcome tonight's host, Jimmy Kimmel!
I'm not going to lie, it's going to be a long night after what was a long year. It was a hard year, but it was also a great year for movies, despite the fact that everything stopped. The people in this room somehow managed to come up with so many excellent films and so many memorable performances. This night is full of enormous talent and untold potential, but so was Madame Web, so who knows? Are we off to a bumpy start? Okay. This is a meaningful occasion for most of you, I know that. And I know that winning an Oscar is something you dreamed about since you were a kid, and now here we are, all dressed up, celebrating the best of the best, beginning with the biggest movie of the year, Barbie. Barbie was a monster hit. What a thing, what an achievement to take a plastic doll nobody even liked anymore. I mean, my wife, before this movie, you'd have had a better chance of getting my wife to buy our daughter a pack of Marlboro Reds than a Barbie doll. Now Barbie's a feminist icon thanks to Greta Gerwig, who many believe deserved to be nominated for Best Director. I know you're clapping, but you're the ones who didn't vote for her, by the way. Don't act like you had nothing to do with it.
It's a tradition unlike any other here at Mad About Movies. It's our annual Oscars post-game show. Tonight we'll be talking about the 96th Academy Awards. I'm your host, Brian Gill, joined as always by my co-hosts, Kate Garrison and Richard Barton. Fellas, how we doing?
Excellent. We're good. Great night watching the Oscars. Excited to do our post-game show, as always.
Yeah,
it's this like, is... what, 11 of these now or something we've done?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, something like
wow.
That.
Wow. The MVP already, I would like to say, the Oscar, we're in Central Time. Uh-huh. The Oscar goes to the 6 p.m. start time.
Yeah.
I'd like to give that Best Picture and the Cecil B. DeMille Lifetime Achievement
right,
Award as well.
Right, yeah. Great choice there. And it wasn't overly long either. Like, what a... Yeah. What a concept, guys. We got all the awards in under 3.5 hours. What What a treat. So it's good times. Good times as
I like talking about the show before we get into the awards.
Yeah.
I liked the pairing of a lot of the awards. Mm-hmm. Two things I liked that were, I thought, innovative were pairing, you know, two awards back to back without a buffer in between, because then that second one didn't really need a long setup, mm-hmm. which was nice. They would come out and do a bit. And that'd be for two awards, which I loved. And then secondly, I liked the, you know, by the time you've seen the Oscars, if you're into this at all, you've seen all the clips. Like, we don't need any more clips. So I liked the, like, other actors giving a quick 30-second, like, toast, basically, mm-hmm. to the person. Because mm-hmm. I don't need to see the scene. I've seen the scene. I watched the other shows. So I thought both of those worked really well.
I like that as well. Kent, what about you? General thoughts on the production of the Oscars this year?
Yeah, I thought it was a good production. I thought Kimmel was a good host, especially at the end, once you have jokes to make about the broadcast itself. I think mm-hmm. he does a particularly good job at that. I'm with you on the doubling up the awards. I thought that did save time, but I'm not with you on the actors doing these disingenuous, I really appreciate you for this reason, something they clearly didn't write or had nothing to do with. And that took up so much time. When they did the first day, you opened the night with that. I was like, no wonder they're starting this thing early. We're going to be in for a long night. But well, that wasn't the case. I think they did do a good job of knowing that people wanted to get in, get out. But my hot take on the Oscars broadcast in general is I work in the technical side of things for my 9-to-5, and even I don't care about the technical awards. So
yeah, but we got rid of those 95%. Everybody lost their mind, so we can't do that.
Okay, but you know, I think that's the other awards clearly understand, like, there's a creative arts ceremony and then there's the televised ceremony. The Oscars doesn't seem to get that. And we need to maybe fix that a little bit. That could tighten it up big time, as if we don't have to see, you know,
ironically,
every single thing that's nominated gets on TV and you get a speech and the whole thing.
Ironically, I feel like that show, and I felt like it hit this year with that. It always works best. It's a night honoring cinema and film culture and the whole thing about that. Yet the show always works better the more it leans into being a TV show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, right. They forget. And every 4 years, they'll be like, Steven Soderbergh's directing the Oscars. And you're like, oh, no. Because then they try to make it into a movie. And I don't want to watch a movie about all these movies. Like, make it, you know, like, get the Price is Right producer out there or whatever. Let's get this thing moving. And and you know, the more TV, it's weird that the Oscars is, the better it is. I feel like it just raises the basement of it. It's like can move along and all that. So. Yeah.
What I am excited for on that note, though, is on the technical awards, Poor Things seem to be the big winner there. Mm-hmm. For all the moms in America that had no idea what that was, to now be like, oh, I'm going to go watch that, and then just be horrified and just no idea what Yorgos is about, and just be like, wow, my God, wow. I'm excited for that, like, tomorrow.
I love Emma Stone. This looks cute.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Emma won? We got to watch that, honey. And then turning it on, like, oh, God.
Worst case, they think it's going to be like Shape of Water.
Right, know? Right.
And then it's Ghost.
And then it's Emma with a dead guy within the first 5 minutes. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Brian had a great take. I hope you don't mind me sharing via text. Remember, we were talking about poor Things a few months ago. And I was seeing it like the next day, so I kind of sent him a, hey, how was it? He was like, you know what? It's good. I'm not really a prude, but like, if this movie's not NC-17, I don't really know why we even have NC-17. It was like, it was such a good way to put it. It's like, I don't mind that it was that.
Right.
I can't imagine anything being more than this.
I'm not leading the outrage. I'm just saying, we do have this rating. That's all I'm saying.
Think it's all about... If you're doing something super outlandish, I think they're a lot more lenient on the rating.
And it's playing to comedy and such. But it's quite an experience. So I like the show. All of the complaints that we or others may have, to me, it all just boils down to, is it under 3.5 hours? Really. You can do pretty much anything you want, except have Amy Schumer tell jokes. And if it gets done in 3.5 hours, I'm good. Starting at 6 is that's a great start. 6 Central, 4 Pacific or whatever. But starting an hour earlier was a great call. And getting us out of there in 3.5 hours, that's the key to me, regardless of however many awards we're going to show or how we're going to do the presentations and all this sort of stuff. That's the thing that matters. I liked the actors presenting versus the clips. I think you probably could have even done both. Like, that would have added 2 minutes to the show to have 30 seconds, like a 30-second montage of the 5 nominees in those 4 categories as the presenters are coming on stage or whatever. But overall, I thought that was a cool thing. I don't know if you want to do it every year, but it was a cool. Yeah. It was a nice curveball to go to.
I'm pretty cool. I'm kind of against. I kind of want to see the clips for the actors. That's something I kind of look forward to. On what clip are they going to choose for the Oscar moment? Right. I don't know.
I can go either way, but I do think this was a fun. This was a different thing. I liked it. Again, if you do it every year, it'll get boring. It will not be cool. But to have it. You can go to this one every once in a while. I think that would be it was a good idea. And it's nice to see some of those actors and actresses up on stage too. I mean, the whole thing is like, we're here to honor these. This whole thing is a celebration of film. So let's do it. You're getting more, I think it is more likely you get that whole concept of celebrating when you have somebody come and give a minute or a 2 minute deal on why they're awesome versus like, here's Mark Ruffalo in green face paint talking about
totally.
they're
just kids.
Sorry.
The other thing about it that I liked is that it's a quasi organic way to get more stars at the show, which is the product that you're selling as a TV show.
Like, absolutely.
You know, Nicolas Cage there there's no reason to even show him, whether he's there or not doesn't matter. But now he's got a little, you know, 25-second piece of business and gives him something to do. And I feel like that's what makes that, what differentiates that show from other award show is like how star-studded it can be. And I do like ways of even artificially bumping that up versus seeing, the you know, they were just 13 years old, you know, clip or whatever. For me, but yeah, I get it. Look, the mileage can vary too. It's like some of the people were really good at it. Some people, it was kind of interesting, like who was good at it and who wasn't, at the little speeches. It wasn't like totally what you would think. Like, again, not to bring it like Nicolas Cage, you could, that seems like a terrible idea. Let's give Nicolas Cage a live mic at the Oscars. And then he did a really nice, you know, kind of funny thing with Giamatti. So like, and was quick. So,
I feel like he added his own line in there of, I would have done that too, but I'm glad
you did. But I think that's great. That's fun, like lean into that kind of stuff. And and the great line, the great, you know, doesn't drop character until the DVD commentary stuff, throwback to Tropic Thunder that Rockwell did was fun. I mean, there was just fun bits about it. I like that, but you're right. I could see, to your point, Kent, if they did this every year, I could see hating it by year three, but I did.
I feel like it's a great idea when you sit down and you're coming up with the Oscars, but maybe the actual execution of it was a little, you know, tighten it up for next year. Maybe, maybe same thing, but find a way to tighten it up.
Okay. Kimmel good. Great on Kimmel for y'all.
Yeah, he's fine. Didn't overuse him. I think you could overuse a host a lot. Too many bits, but it felt like, he'd show up every 15 minutes or so, which was fine. But this goes for more everything in life in general, and especially tonight. Needed more DAG.
Absolutely. More DAG. But we got DAG, though. I didn't know that was happening until it happened.
But we need more. We already have DAG in our lives.
DAG is kind of Kimmel's, Ed McMahon is great. And that was... him doing all those kind of announcer stuff is great. You know, just getting him used to the scene for when he eventually wins his Oscar.
Yeah, just let him host. That was his audition for maybe hosting next year. I'm good.
Yeah, he and Mulaney both had their
hosting. It seemed like Mulaney was like, if he wants that gig, it's his at this point, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to you and me and everyone, that bit was really funny. It played really well on Twitter. It was hysterically funny. Blah, blah. I don't know if it landed that well in the room. And I think that's...
You don't? They were like giving him a standing ovation at the end, it felt like.
Nah, a lot of people said it really died. Like a lot of people that were there were saying it, they were pissed off because it was really funny and did not, and kind of bombed. So it's hard to tell, right?
I think he'd be a better Globes host than Oscars. That would be ideal, I think. I think he would crush that.
I would personally love it. I think he'd be great. And hopefully that was just kind of spurious info, but apparently there was some confusion. But yeah, that was very funny. And Kimmel has a really good skill. I hope I can describe this well. You know, he does pretty standard jokes at these things, you know, set up, boom, punchline. But he does them in almost I know it's a monologue, but he does them quick back to back to back to back in like a monologue form. He doesn't let a laugh break sit. He kind of just keeps going. He's really comfortable because I mean, obviously he does it four nights a week. And that kind of momentum, even if the jokes are, you know, 6 out of 10, sometimes you're on to the next one before you can even blink. And so it's kind of hard for him to bomb in that way. He may not have the home run joke of like a Mulaney, even though some years he does. I thought that Emma Stone joke at the end was hysterical about the envelope. But he does kind of really keep it moving with the jokes.
Yeah, he does. I think he's very suited for this kind of thing because he also doesn't, you know, he had a few jokes that kind of didn't really land, were a little bit flat, and he's so good at just being like, cool, and just moving right along to the next one, and that I think helps in these moments too. I mean, you can get great comedy out of that. You can do the bit where you're like, you know, draw the attention to the bad joke, but you can get away with that maybe once. You can't do that a bunch of times over the course of 3 hours.
The Johnny Carson or Conan thing of like calling attention to that is a really cute, fun thing in a 1 hour show. Super annoying in a 3.5 hour show. You gotta do the Kimmel where you just pretend like it didn't happen and move on.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I thought that was good. Feelings on the, I guess this is my last question, then we can get into the awards, like the in memoriam, the songs, the kind of the parts of this that make the traditional Oscar ceremony, how'd they go? How did you feel like that landed, Kent?
Yeah, I thought that was fine. It's not the Oscars' fault that there was a lackluster selection of Best Original Song nominees this year.
I'm just kidding, crushed. Like, that was a huge moment, like in the room and then also with watchers. People were into that. Well, that was a very well done bit. But the others, I'm sure, with you. Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get there on the Best Original Song conversation. But yeah, I agree. I thought overall it was a great broadcast. Just, you know, maybe same format next year, tighten it up, could lose 30 minutes, you know, do it even better next year. No issues overall, though. The John Cena bit was great. Was classic too.
Yeah.
It feels like a classic bit already.
Yeah, that was a great time. All right, we want to go through some of these awards?
Let's hit it.
Okay. First award of the night was Best Actress in a Supporting Role. Emily Blunt. I'm not going to go through the nominees. We did all that. It went to Divine Joy Randolph. Excuse me, I almost said Robinson. Divine Joy Randolph, who I think we all were in agreement on, loved that performance in that movie, and she was well-deserving. Great speech, too, when she got up there. It was pretty great.
Yeah, same. Thought the speech stuck out as one of the best of the night, so shout out to her.
Yeah.
She was great. And it was a good first one because that kind of that publicist joke, which I hope people kept touching on. I hope they weren't being mean about it because I thought it was really cute when she did it. But that kind of gave everyone a good through line to the rest of the show to kind of make jokes, you know, not at her expense, but you know, commenting on that, which was good. When that happens organically, it's leads to a funnier show.
I think it's always a smart, and this is maybe it's been different at some point, but it feels like it always starts with either Best Supporting Actress or Actor, and we jump back and forth. And I think that's such a smart choice overall, because generally speaking, there's a really good chance that whoever wins that Oscar is going to be a career actor kind of performance, you know, somebody who has been doing the character work, the background, or who's been working to get to this place. Obviously, somebody like Robert Downey Jr., that changes the, you know, he's a freaking movie star and whatnot. But I always feel like when somebody who the room is rooting for wins that first award, it kind of sets the show on the right tone and right foot and gets moving forward in the right way. So I always dig that. Smart choice. Do you guys want all of the awards, or are we hitting the biggies?
Let's hit the biggies.
Okay. Animated film ended up going to The Boy and the Heron, one over Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, I think was the other major major challenger here. That was one that I tried several times to get to, and I just couldn't. I could not make it work with my schedule, so I still haven't seen that one yet. Can't. Did you see this? I can't remember if this
I didn't make it to this one either in the theater.
All right.
But it's, yeah, I've heard great things and
I love it's weird. Away.
It's weird to see, you know, Disney Pixar not even in the conversation. So I guess that's a big takeaway from 2003 in general.
Yeah. Okay. The Screenplay Awards, original went to Anatomy of a Fall, and adapted went to American Fiction. Going to you first on this one, Richard.
Yeah, I mean, Anatomy of the Fall, I was kind of with you on it, Brian. I wasn't as in love with it as a lot of, you know, people seem to be this year. I did think those two people were very cool. I like their speech. They're just like cool French people. And I don't know if you saw later on, there was a smoking section in the Oscars, like in the thing. It was just them and Kirsten Dunst. That rocked.
Yeah. Smoking's just back, man.
It's
back.
Yeah, it's just having cigs at the Oscars backstage. So that made me like them immediately. So I'm now, even though I maybe artistically I'm less glad they won, I'm glad they won just sort of spiritually. They just seem cool.
Sure.
American Fiction, really exciting. You know, that was my number one of the year, so I'm glad that that got an award. That's a really fun adaptation. Is, you know, the interesting thing of that movie's mostly making fun of like sapphire books and that won whatever 18 mm-hmm. years ago. So that was right. kind of funny. They both won the screenplay, both the satire and the actual original piece. So, but yeah, I'm so excited for what could come next with Cord, man. He to me is up there with among the most young and exciting filmmakers. What's next from him? Mm. But what's cool about this is he's definitely someone, and I love when this happens, and it can't happen for everyone, but he's definitely someone that's going to make interesting, thought-provoking Oscar-type movies. And I love when people get the Oscar over with right away so they don't have to Amy Adams their decisions for the next 10 years. He can just make cool stuff that he wants to make and not have to chase a trophy. If he gets one, I'm sure he'd be thrilled to. But, you know, like, how much better would Amy Adams' career be if she had just won an Oscar in 2008?
Right.
Or for Drop Dead Gorgeous, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. But, you know, so I'm glad, because that's someone that I think will be a fun, interesting voice for years to come. And it's cool to have the kind of trophy off his back.
Yeah, totally agree. Kent,
the writing categories? Yeah, same. My big takeaway from American Fiction was, who made this movie? Mm-hmm. And I just kept looking him up, and I was like, this is his first directorial effort on, and as far as like narrative movies goes. And I was blown away. So Cord Jefferson, definitely somebody to watch. Excited about that. It felt like an upset. I mean, I would have thought Barbie or Oppenheimer would have won that award coming into the night. Sure. Good thing I didn't bet on the Oscars, because I would have lost money this year. That's for sure. Anatomy of a Fall seemed like an upset too. And here's the thing with that. It's not up everybody's alley, but it feels like literally ever since Parasite won Best Picture, if you win the Palme d'Or, you're going to be heavily embraced and pushed by the Academy and its people. So I don't even, like, these aren't even necessarily, I mean, Anatomy of a Fall is, you know, murder story, so it's a little more mainstream, but is Titan in any other world, would that have been Triangle of Sadness even last year?
Right.
And so, yeah, I just think there's a shift in what we're recognizing and including in the conversation that we haven't had, you know, until very recently.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, the adapted category was stacked this year. You really could have gone just about any way. It's still a little frustrating to me that Barbie ended up in this category instead of original. It's I don't know. Wasn't, to me, doesn't make a ton of sense, but I guess to the absolute technical definition, it is an adaptation. I wonder if the news or the rumors surrounding the holdovers made it to voters before the vote was actually in. Because that story just broke like this weekend, basically. And that felt like a pretty heavy favorite for a good chunk of the lead up to this thing. And then it ends up, you know, it gets shut out. It did not win this award. Anyway, that's a little bit of maybe conspiracy.
They didn't want an egg on the face scenario in a couple months, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, it seems a little odd how much, again, that felt like a prohibitive favorite, and maybe I just misread that, but it felt like that was almost a lock to win this category once Barbie got bumped to adapted, and then it ends up, you know, not winning it. So anyway, I wonder if there was some thought behind the scenes. I did not
The listener that doesn't know, there was a screenwriter who basically pitched, I think, that story to Alexander Payne or sent him the screenplay years ago that he passed on. Yeah. And then here comes the holdovers. And somebody tweeted out like the similarities.
Yeah.
And there's like 25 things that he's arguing that Alexander Payne stole.
There's a lot of specific,
very specific
details that I'm usually pretty, you got to really bring a strong case to me to do the plagiarizing thing for me to really kind of to go with you. Cause I just feel like, I don't know, there's only like 5 original stories. So I, you know, we're at a certain point, we're all
sure. I'm the same way.
That one was one where you read that and you're like, oh, that's not great. Like, that's going to be tough to defeat. If, in fact, Alexander Payne, if they can prove that he actually did have access to it, that's a tough one. I don't know. It could be, that could get ugly. So I wonder if that had anything to do with the way it went. But I'm in the camp. I did not, Anatomy of Fall is a movie that I just more than any other movie this year that people really dug. I was like, I don't understand. I don't get what, maybe it would have been different for me watching it in a theater, or maybe it would have been different for me if it wasn't subtitled. I'm an idiot and have a hard time paying attention to subtitles a lot of times, but I, even tonight, there was like multiple references to like the twist, and I was like, I thought it was.
And you got really Titane too. You were like all in on Titane.
Yeah.
So this is normally you're in tab. On these type of stuff.
Anyway, didn't really understand. Not my fault, but that's fine. Adapted was great. Let's see. Poor Things then won 3 in a row. Got makeup and hairstyling, production design, and costume design. So that at that point, it started to feel like, okay, Hollywood weirdos really dug this weird movie. So we're going to see that. It started to feel at that point like, okay, I came into the night feeling like Lily Gladstone was maybe not a lock, but relatively close to that. And as those awards came off the board, you started to feel like, ooh, okay, they were really into this. This may change things later on, which we'll see. Actor in a supporting role ends up going to Robert Downey Jr. As always, a stacked field with Sterling K. Brown, Ryan Gosling, Mark Ruffalo, and Robert De Niro as well. Kent, going to you first. How do we feel on the Robert Downey Jr. piece of this?
That was awesome. Great speech. Felt like he knew he was going to win, not like a big shocking moment type of thing. So that's great. Excited to see what he does next. Looks like he's researching some type of grandma role with the way he was dressed tonight. So excited to see where that goes. But he's got some HBO show coming out that I saw the trailer for that looks like he plays like four characters in it or something. Yeah. It looks unbelievable. So we'll see him at the Emmys doing his thing, I'm sure, too.
Yeah.
That was
great. Always cool with Robert Downey Jr.'s just overall Q rating within the industry has got to be about as high as it gets. People love that dude. And so it's cool to see. I mean, the comeback already happened when he made $400 billion off of Iron Man, you know, but to see that come full circle from where he was through the majority of the 90s and early 2000s and the uninsurability and all of this stuff, it's kind of cool. I mean, you could always see the insane talent that this guy has. And that's part of why he's been given 4 billion chances. You know, that's the way that
I was talking to you guys about this.
But it's really cool to see how much, how happy that room was for him.
They were doing press for Oppenheimer a couple weeks ago on Kimmel.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on there. And I think I texted you guys and said, is it just me or does Robert Downey Jr. seem like the most grateful, humble, nice person you'll ever come across? I can't remember a time where I haven't seen him where he's just the most complimentary person. Like when he's around other celebrities, he's just, it's all about them and never about himself. He seems like the person, like if you were working with him on a movie and he liked you, you would show up to set one day and there'd be like a brand new car sitting there for you and be like, oh yeah, heard you say you like cars, you know, and just move about his day. Like he just seems, I don't know what about him, but when people say he was a horror story, it's very hard for me to fathom those days with the Robert Downey Jr. we now know and love.
This may be one of those things where I'm a little bit older than you guys. I mean, I remember that. I remember how awful he looked and just his last sentencing, I'm pretty sure that was the one where the judge was like, hey, man, you're going to die. Like, what are we doing here? Like, I'm trying to save your life here. If he's not an incredibly grateful, gracious person at this point, he's doing a great job of faking it.
Right.
But it really does come across as somebody who truly has been given a second chance at life and is trying to make the most of it. And, you know, it certainly helps that he has incredible talent. I mean, he's just such a talented actor and performer, and so it helps to have that to fall back on. But it was that whole decade and a half was tough. It felt like a foregone conclusion. It felt like you would see the article in like Entertainment Weekly or whatever about his latest arrest or drug or whatever, and you felt like it was inevitable that within a year or two, it was going to be the tragic death of Robert Downey Jr., you know?
And he said something great, and I think it summarizes this whole experience up perfectly for him, which was, I needed this movie more than this movie needed me.
Mm,
yeah. And we never really talked about on our review of the movie of how many actors could have done that role and been great.
Mm.
And, you know, they kind of had to age him up and do a lot of stuff for it to be him.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely the right choice, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. I went on a little long there. Richard, any thoughts on supporting actor and RDJ?
No, I mean, he's just someone that would be absurd if he didn't have a statue. So it's good, mm-hmm. good that he did that. He's, you know, to his credit, has not been someone that's really tried. I mean, I think The Judge was a little cynical.
Yeah.
Right.
The Soloist, maybe.
The Soloist, yeah. A couple times. Yep. That's a good call out. But other than that,
The Judge. I mean, God, forgot about that.
Yeah. He's mostly just done either, you know, big, you know, mass pop culture things or, you know, things like Tropic Thunder or things like that. Yeah. I mean, he's always great. And
Dr. Dolittle.
Yeah. Yeah. The Do. But I do think he was. Not necessarily needing a comeback like he did in you know, post drug abuse.
Sure.
But I do think he was kind of lost before this a bit, mm-hmm. in the very rich wilderness of movie star.
Right.
Of, okay, yeah. I can't do Tony Stark anymore. What do I do now? You know,
mm-hmm.
what, you know, and I've become this kind of persona. So how do I kind of rein that back in to an extent? And mm-hmm. this was a real, you know, he kind of referenced that a bit in his speech that, he needed this more than they needed him.
Right.
And to see him do something a little more grounded in drama. And yeah, he's got a lot of cool things coming out. Unfortunately, some of it are Sherlock Holmes spinoff series for HBO Max as well. But, but you know, we'll let that be. But yeah, he's doing another Shane Black movie. So that could be cool.
Yeah. Love Last chance this. For you, Shane Black.
Yeah, exactly.
You better hope you got the magic.
Can you give us a little read through of that script, just the three of us.
Yeah,
we'll take a sharpie to a few things. Yeah,
I'm pretty cheap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope. Too many Tourette's jokes. Can't do that. Sorry, man. Different. It's a different time. Visual effects went to Godzilla Minus One. I know I went to you first last time, but I'm gonna go to you first again because this is kind of your world. Godzilla, man, let's freaking do it. This movie cost like $10 million and it looked incredible, and it ends up beating out like Guardians of the Galaxy and Mission Impossible and mm-hmm. Napoleon and the like. That was a pretty cool win. Pretty great time for a Godzilla crew.
Yeah, Godzilla's back. And really cool to see a movie that I think Guardians of the Galaxy probably spent 10 times more on their VFX budget than Godzilla.
Yeah,
and Godzilla looked as good, if not better. So
yeah.
Great to see these kind of indie VFX houses get real awesome work done.
Yeah,
and I'm not even sure the process there, but whatever they did, do it again.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. The first Oppenheimer Award comes off the board for editing. I think that was the first one, right? Did I miss another one? I think that was the first one. Editing, which, like, if that movie's not going to win editing, then I don't know why we're giving awards for editing. You know,
I really like the editor.
Yeah,
she was like she seemed like I always like when it's like, wow, this normal person's just at the Oscars right now talking.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, my friend Brad texted. I think it was during. It was either during that one or the Godzilla one, and just said it's so funny. When the behind the camera people have to be on camera and just, you see like their normal or weird person out, like the Godzilla crew all were wearing heels and the heels were Godzilla claws and stuff. That was pretty funny. And just them trying to be, be in front of the camera it's funny. But yeah. She gave a great speech and the editing on that was unbelievable. Skip over documentaries. Cinematography goes to Oppenheimer as well. Richard, thoughts on that? I'll be honest, it didn't feel like a super strong year for cinematography. But regardless, I think that for me, the cinematography in this one was pretty great, regardless of what it was competing against.
Oh, agreed. Agreed, yeah. Even in the clips that they showed, it was funny. I was like, you know, when they give the five nominees, the clips were not that stunning in terms of shot structure. Sure. I mean, better than anything I could ever do in a billion years. But some years you right. watch that and you, oh my God, yeah, look at that. I'd frame that in my house. Right.
Yeah.
And this year was you know, the good looking stuff. But I agree. A weaker year on that front.
Sure.
Yeah, it feels like Christopher Nolan, as soon as they decided to shoot this whole thing in IMAX, that they pretty much got the Oscar booked with that. Sure. I think, you know, it's going to win. But I thought Poor Things with The Night It Was Going might have a shot there. Mm.
Sure. Yeah. Killers of the Flower Moon had pretty great cinematography too. So that was, to me, that was the other real competitor with Oppie. But yeah. Okay. Wes Anderson won an Oscar, wasn't there, but he won an Oscar, which is pretty cool. That's the first one for him, I believe. Although it's for a short. I completely forgot this was a thing. I never watched it. It was something I was like, oh, that'll be cool. And then I just completely forgot about it when it came out for Henry Sugar. Sound goes to Zone of Interest over the creator, Mission Impossible, Maestro, and Oppenheimer. Kent, your thoughts on sound here?
Yeah, Zone of Interest obviously relies heavily on sound and narratively, so that helps. It's obviously very well done, but I mean, Oppenheimer was great too. So I thought it was between those two, and I guess if Zone of Interest is going to win something, that's probably what it should win.
Sure. Okay.
Agreed.
Original score goes to Oppenheimer. That was not a lock. It felt like maybe it should be, for me at least. That was, I'm not the score guy, but that was far and away the best score of the year for me, discounting everything that John Williams is always great. I love the indie score. But so much of the stuff that was great about the indie score was the borrowing from the previous indie movies too. So for me, this was Oppenheimer. Richard, where do we stand on score? Yeah, and you want to go ahead and give us some thoughts on song too, which ended up going to Billie Eilish's What Was I Made For over I'm Just Kin and some other songs that no one is going to remember.
The Cheeto song. So score, I both like, we love Ludwig here on this here podcast. So, that was cool to see him win. I agree. It's a great, great score. The way that movie works, or pardon me, that score works with the sound design too, within that film is really, I mean, there's no word for that, but I think those are, I guess, well, maybe editing a bit, but, how those are merged together is wonderful. That score is great. Song. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm Just Kin is, it was an awesome performance and really fun, you know, silly a bit that's like nominated for best song a bit to me, but like when you see it against the other nominees, you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, actually. I don't care for the Billie Eilish song. I love Billie Eilish. That's just not like, it's a very low tier for me of all of her songs. You know, not that I'm against it winning. I think it's cool that she wins awards, but you know, to me, that's not like a great song of the year caliber in some of the years we had. But Diane Warren didn't win, so that's always good. I like that.
I think that's 15 losses for Diane Warren in this category. Nice. So pretty impressive. The only thing I'll say here is something from Barbie should have won, but in my opinion, this is the third song that people are going to think of when they think of Barbie. They'll think of I'm Just Kin, and they'll think of the Dua Lipa song. And they'll be like, oh yeah, that one too. The one she won on, you know. So it's not even the most memorable one from the movie, in my opinion. And it's and it won the award. So where is Dua Lipa? Come on. What are you doing, Academy?
I say that about most television shows.
They saw Argylle and then they took the award
that's
away.
Fair. Fair. Sexist though, because Cena got to be in on the show. We should talk about the Cena bit real quick.
Oh yeah, man, that was a good bit. I texted you guys when it started, and I said, "Man, this is funny. It needs to be Damon, just given the Kimmel Damon back and forth." But then when he actually came out onto the stage, and stuff, I was like, "Okay, no, this is a John Cena bit." I thought it was hilarious. That worked really, really well, and
great slapstick timing too. The way
he
pulled that off was awesome. I also loved a lot of the internet being surprised at how jacked John Cena is. Seems like someone that shouldn't surprise us that he's jacked.
He's a freaking wrestler, guys. Like,
what are you?
And is shirtless. I mean,
all the time, right?
Thousands of hours of him in only jorts exist anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
Jorts is worse than naked was a great line.
Yeah, great line.
Maybe the line of the night other than Mulaney's Madam Web joke. That was
and the Mulaney Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
Are you going to pay your mortgage? No, I'm just going to watch Ghost play baseball.
Field of Dreams should win Best Picture, but they'll probably award something from this year. That was great.
Strong. Very strong. All right. Best Actor ends up with Cillian Murphy over Jeffrey Wright, Paul Giamatti, Colman Domingo, and also Bradley Cooper somehow. Kent, your thoughts on Cillian Murphy? And this, you know, this category, if you have anything.
Yeah, I mean, what more can you say? He is great. It's interesting to me. He seems to be a front runner for Bond now. So I'm having a hard time picturing
that look to me. He's a beautiful man. Don't get me wrong. He has more of a Bond villain look than Bond, in my opinion.
It's not even about the look. I think it's just about the charisma. But
I think
he's just never done anything like that before.
Like that
where,
too. Yeah,
or he's been given like real star opportunity roles. Maybe this is the turning point for that. Other than 28 Days Later and stuff like that. But
I will say he's great. He's brilliant in the movie. He's a wonderful actor. Someone we've all loved for years, and seems like a very lovely fellow. I will not take his or stand for his red eye erasure on this Oscar trail. When he said that Christopher Nolan saved him for having to do movies like Red Eye, how dare you, sir?
Work with Rachel McAdams? Wow. Yeah. I take that personally.
Red Eye is an all-timer. Yeah. All-timer.
Good movie.
Yeah.
Good movie.
You snob.
Yeah.
And I loved...
I've seen Red Eye 600 times. I've seen Oppenheimer twice, so right now you're the guy from Red Eye.
And the presenting of this, how Brendan Fraser said something so accurate of when you see Jeffrey Wright pop up in something, you know it's going to be good. And that's just so true. I mean, it's like, at least I'm going to have
unless
this.
Unless Zack Snyder's a director. One asterisk there.
Yeah. It would have been okay with me if Brendan Fraser would have given his Oscar to Jeff Ward, personally. I would have been okay with that. That would have righted some wrongs all the way around. But look, I love Cillian Murphy. That was across all categories, that was the best performance of the year for me. I thought he was just truly magnificent in that movie. And I also like when, I don't know that we're going to have too many more Cillian Murphy nominated for Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor for sure. I think that could definitely be in his future, but he's not going to lead, in my opinion. Maybe he's going to be Bond. I don't know, but he's not going to lead too many more movies that are going to be, of a high caliber in terms of box office or critical success. He just kind of has the character actor vibe.
He's
so good
at
doing those things.
My weekly recommend a few months or weeks ago was that Small Things Like These. That's the kind of movie I can see him. I mean, that's going to be a pretty small little Irish. He'll be the lead in it, but like that'll be a nice little Irish.
And maybe somewhere along the line, there's one of those that breaks through the way that like Bill Nighy broke through last year. With Living.
There a rumor was up for Doctor Doom or is up for Doctor Doom?
I think that's out there. I have a hard time believing that he's going to enjoy doing the series franchise kind of thing. Yeah. I don't know that obviously, but it seems like he would be happy to step in for a movie like Batman or Quiet Place 2 or whatever. But I don't know that he's super interested in having a franchise built around him. Now maybe maybe it changes things. Maybe he got some points on Oppie and now he's got an Oscar and he's like, yeah, totally give me $50 million to be in a few of these movies. I can handle that, but he doesn't really have that vibe to me.
But I do think he'll get nominated a few more times. The greatest gift, I would love to see data on this, but the greatest gift of an Oscar is the statue is cool, but then also everything you do from the rest of your career, everyone at least asks themselves, is this Oscar worthy?
Sure.
It may be yes or no, but they don't, until you win the Oscar, they don't always ask, you know, they don't see your performance in that prism all the time, unless it's just truly great. But now, like, everything he does for the next 10 years, because he has an Oscar, they'll go, was that an Oscar-worthy performance? And then they'll go, yes, if it was. And then if you could get people asking that question about your work, it's like the greatest gift you can get. Like, you know, sure. Emma Stone forever now will have that.
Right. Yeah.
The second, third, fourth nominations are the easiest ones. Not easy.
Yeah.
Still hard, but like way easier right. to get to me than the right. first.
Yeah. No, I think there's something to that. The Oppie party continued with director as Christopher Nolan comes away. This felt like the lock of the night, maybe. I mean, this was, if you were, but then I guess once Poor Things started building, yeah, exactly. then maybe it could have been Yorgos coming in. I should say it felt like this was a pretty easy win, but yeah, our boy, Chris Nolan, MacGruber's own, Fast and Furious own, part of the family. Christopher Nolan now has a directing Oscar and well-deserved, in my opinion. Kent, any thoughts on the director award?
Yeah, Christopher Nolan, the successful version of Mad About Movies, with his love of Fast and MacGruber, as you mentioned. I thought it could be Poor Things. I kept having to remind myself, as the night went on, and you know, we did a preview a few weeks back of the nominees and things like that, and we keep trying to think about how the Academy thinks when predicting this stuff. And I keep having to remind myself that we now live in a post everything everywhere world where that movie won Best Picture and basically swept the Oscars. And so, you know, Poor Things headed into the night, I was like, I don't know. And then I just got a feeling that it was kind of shifting in that direction. And I thought Yorgos might have a chance here, but alas, good old Chris. Mm-hmm. Martin Scorsese just sitting there livid the entire night. That was, was kind of funny to witness.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, he did not seem to be enjoying the night all that much. It wasn't like every time Tommy Lee Jones is it anything or anything like that. But yeah, he didn't seem like he was super enjoying his time at the Oscars. I think Marty's probably got one more in him. This next the Bible one he's got.
I think he's starting that next month or something.
Yeah, that could be a big player. Especially, I mean, gosh, if he was somehow able to get it out this year, like, there's no way.
There's no way.
This is such a. This is going to be a really tough year. So, anyway, congrats to Chris Nolan, who I truly believe would love Mad About Movies if we could get that to him. If we could get him involved, he would love us, I think. Actress in a leading role. Lily Gladstone was the runaway favorite to win this thing the whole way through, I believe. And then Poor Thing starts winning and you're like, uh-oh, this could be a thing. And sure enough, Emma Stone comes away with her second Oscar. She is now in like crazy elite company at this point, and she's 35, I think. So, you know, very successful person. Richard, I'm going to go to you first here. Thoughts on the win for Stone, but maybe also a little bit on the category and how this played out.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of a surprise as much as the major, you know, categories was. That was a big, I think there was a lot of momentum for Gladstone early. I know, Leo in particular was like really active in promoting her, et cetera. I just didn't feel quite the momentum of Poor Things for the entire awards season. But then something started happening a few weeks ago. I don't know what that was. And it really started to pick up some speed. And Emma Stone also is great in that movie. That's a really showy, wild performance. That's the kind of movie that wins Oscar, the kind of character that wins Oscars. And she totally hits out of the park. I mean, it's no disparagement on her, but I think she was pretty shocked she won it. But that's great. I mean, she is someone that was like instantly likable from the minute you see her in the House Bunny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Super Bad and all that. And she go, oh, wow, this is a really really likable screen presence. This person will be in my life for a long time. I don't think I thought she will have two Oscars before she's 40. You know, she could end up with like the with four Oscars or something, which is great. But I can't say I saw that coming. It's kind of like she's in this new suddenly in like 4 years, like this whole different paradigm as an actor, which is, and a lot of that is credit to Yorgos. I think is a real there. I think they're a real muse for each other, which is not the most likely pairing. And I think that's what makes it cool.
Yeah, well put. Kent, any thoughts?
Yeah, we're entering Meryl Streep territory with Emma Stone. I mean, she's that good. Everybody seems to like her. She can do anything. This is a great performance for her. But you guys need to see The Curse. You need to see her in The Curse. I mean, she is great in that. And I'm excited to see if she wins an Emmy for it because it's that good. She's fantastic. What can I say?
She's great. I think I loved her. I really did. I loved her performance. She was so funny. Played it really well. Her acceptance speech tonight was great, too. I love Emma Stone. One of my favorite actresses. Academy, definitely. And look, I don't know how you change it. It's not like you can't really look at optics when you count the votes, right? I mean, it's the votes are what the votes are. There's going to be some frustration about Lily Gladstone not winning, I think. And I think there's some validity to that. I didn't love Killers of the Flower Moon. I think I was the lowest of the three of us on the lowest of the three of us. Is that what am I trying to say?
Yes.
The lowest of us on that one. But I thought her performance was like, really, really good, like almost to the point of carrying the movie in places. And so again, when you're talking about like what the content of the movie is, and then, you know, something like it there's going to be some upset on that side. And okay, you know, cause Emma Stone's great. At least it's not like, you know, like if Annette Bening had somehow come away with the win here or something, then that really becomes an issue. It's hard to say, yeah, Lily Gladstone was great. Also, Emma Stone was great. You can kind of live with those two things. But yeah, there's going to be some upset people about it. And I'm interested to see, I guess. Maybe I'm not interested to see how that plays out. I hope that Lily Gladstone continues to get good work. She's got a series dropping on Hulu that they were advertising during the ceremony tonight, and we were joking about it in the Discord, but it also was very true. They definitely had a bumper trailer for that said Academy Award winner Lily Gladstone, you know, is in this new show on Hulu. I hope that she keeps getting good chances, good work, because she was magnificent in this movie. And I hope this is not just like, well, I hope in 10 years we're not like, hey, remember when Lily Gladstone was in a movie? That would suck. And things potentially change on that if you're the Oscar winner instead of the Oscar nominee. But you know, can't take anything away from Emma Stone on that. She was great. Final award of the night. We got out of there in time. Despite Al Pacino's best efforts, we did find out that Oppenheimer did in fact win Best Picture this year over American Fiction, Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Poor Things, Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, Past Lives, which got shut out tonight, unfortunately, and The Zone of Interest. Yeah, this was my number one movie of the year. I feel like there's a decent chance this ends up being like the number one movie of the decade for me when it's all said and done. I thought it was a masterpiece. I think it deserves its win. And I was, yeah, especially once Chris Nolan won the award, you're like, you know, okay, this is where we're headed for this one. It would have been quite a surprise if Maestro had come out on top here or something like that. But final thoughts on Oppenheimer, and we'll never talk about it again until we get to the year of our Lord 2030 or 2031. Richard, Oppenheimer thoughts and Best Picture.
You know, great big old school epic about big thing in American history, a big thing that had implications across, obviously, forever, that people were not necessarily always talking about, you know, outside of, you know, certain maybe like activist groups, things like that. So it was fun. People criticized that film for, and understandably in some levels, for being, you know, taking that kind of weighty subject matter, presenting it in this kind of maybe exposition heavy blockbuster popcorn way. And I look at that as a great testament to it. I think that is now there's so many more people who are aware of like these people's impact on our world for both good and for bad, what that period meant for the history of humankind going forward. And that's I like the best thing about Nolan is that he refuses. He makes things approachable for all audiences, but doesn't dumb down to said audiences. And that should be recognized every few years. Not everything has to be, you know, I would not say Oppenheimer is a groundbreaking film. And I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I think it's a very, very great movie and deserves a great best picture that, by the way, everybody saw. That's always cool, too.
Yeah, that's
that,
true.
That matters. So, yeah, that's my kind of final thoughts on it.
Kent?
Yeah, heavy in practical effects and actual, you know, shooting on film. So I think that's a win for studios to look at spending money on actual things and seeing justification for that. So that's great in the big picture of things. I mean, what an incredible movie. It's oddly one of the least divisive movies of the year. And going into the year, I would have said this is going to be one of the most divisive movies of the year. Just the subject matter, the guy making it, all that kind of stuff. It seemed very universally loved, at least to people that I've talked to. You know, not everybody was into Killers of the Flower Moon. A lot of people shut off Maestro halfway through, that kind of thing. Right. And this didn't seem to be the case with Oppenheimer. And so, you know, it's certainly, you know, one of the least divisive Oscar wins that I can think of, too.
Mm-hmm. It's no Green Book, but sure. Yeah, otherwise it's pretty good as compared to the, yeah. Love this movie. That was great. We'll definitely be, to your point, Richard, like a lot of people saw it. To your point, Kent, nobody, it did not seem overly divisive to a lot of people, to most people. And it's cool that the movie, what this year will be remembered for is Barbenheimer. And so to have that movie, one of those movies, be the movie that comes out on top at the end of the year is a cool thing. This is unlikely to be a year where we revisit in 5 years and say, what the heck were we doing? Or in the moment we did this, but then that movie lost all steam like immediately and no one thought about it ever again. I don't believe that's going to be the case with this movie. And that's a cool thing that makes for a good best picture winner, in my opinion, especially when it's of this quality. So it's a cool deal. Cool. All right. Well, this has been our Oscars postgame show, or like, I don't know, 11th annual. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Next week, we'll be doing, it's a big one next week, boys. We're doing our 1,000th episode celebration, 1,000 episodes of Mad About Movies in the books. And we'll be doing some kind of a list, some big show. We're planning it all out, and it'll be a good time. So, thank you for participating in that. Thank you for helping us to get to 1,000 shows, and for being part of our little community here. We really appreciate you. If you like these episodes and you're not subscribed to our VIP feed, well, guess what? There's just like so many more episodes available to you at madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. Sign up over there for $5 a month and you'll get access to 4 extra reviews every single month, plus hundreds of episodes in the back catalog and the access to our Discord and a whole bunch of other fun stuff. We'd love to see you over there as well. Thanks for being here. Stay safe and we'll see you at the cinema. Bye.
Hey baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me yah-yah. The salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.